Blog Talk.
Welcome to Heart Talk with Miss E. Today we are continuing our celebration of National Adoption Month, and our topic today is Another Choice for Black Children, Bringing the Village Home. Our guest tonight, who we're still waiting for, is Ms. Ruth Amerson, who herself is an adoptive parent and the CEO of Another Choice for Black Children Adoption Agency located in Raleigh, North Carolina. And I'm real excited to be talking to Ms. Ruth because we have a kindred spirit and having a care and a concern and a special place in our hearts and in our homes for our youth. I formerly was an adoption social worker, and with my caseload, I had children who were considered to be special needs children, and they were children who were either older, and by older we usually refer to in the adoption field, meaning school age, because most people, when they look at adopting, really want children who are preschool age or infants or toddlers. So the caseload that I carried had children who were beyond school age, many of them adolescents, many of them children of African-American ethnicity, children who were part of sibling groups, and children who may have had some type of emotional or developmental delays. And those children were considered to be high-risk children. And we know that within the system of the foster care system, we have over 500,000 children in the United States alone who are dependents of the court and are without permanent homes. And my goal as an adoption social worker was to be sure that these children also had an opportunity to experience being in a forever home, what we call family. So in that effort, when I met Ms. Ruth Amerson many years later, she herself had started this organization, and I've had the wonderful opportunity of visiting with Ms. Ruth and the children in her village and the adults in her village for a few years back-to-back during National Adoption Month, in which their celebration is Friends of Black Children. So I am looking forward to it. I hope that she isn't experiencing some technical difficulty getting on the line. But one of the things that even took our connection even further, while Ms. Ruth herself, a single mom of two teenage boys, and pursuing her vision of finding homes for these children, had a young man in her own life who was looking for a home. And 2 years ago, Ms. Ruth herself became an adoptive parent, and that's why I've called this program Bringing the Village Home, because not only was she doing a work in the village, she brought the village home. And as stated in my book, it's hard work being the village that brings a child. It is not easy. So, but to have the perspective of being both a professional in the field as a social worker, and for myself also being a clinical therapist, then adding to that role being that part of the triad, which the triad consists of a birth parent, the adoptive parent, and the child. And there is a lot of energy and emotion that takes place in that complete process. So for one, my not being one who really adheres or pays attention to a lot of the statistics, I don't know them specifically, but I do know that there is an overwhelming number of youth in the foster care system who are children of minority ethnic groups. And somehow the system has determined that there are not enough families. And one of the things that I experienced in the process is also realizing that sometimes it was a matter of not having the appropriate cultural composition in the workers who were going out to work, also having cultural competence and understanding certain aspects of the culture in which children may have come from. And so my goal is not excluding the need for children of all ethnicities, races, and backgrounds, but to look at the overwhelming response and the need to keep some cultural continuity for our young people, because it's bad enough having to go into an environment that you're unfamiliar with just based on physical location and knowing that familiarity with your family, but also how it is to go on and pick up a whole another set of cultural values. And so this topic is not about, which is often a dilemma, about transracial adoption. It's about what we need to look at first and foremost in terms of creating that sense of acceptance and belonging for a child. And you will also, as we talk throughout the next several months, we will address the issue of transracial adoptions, speaking to adults who, adoptive parents who have adopted transracially, as well as the children who have grown up in transracial placements. And with every child, with every situation, as always, there is going to be some that were positive, some that were not so positive, and that's just the nature of being human and dealing with the situations that come to the forefront. But my goal in doing this talk show is that we will learn how to be prepared to deal. We can't control, we can't make everything perfect, but we can definitely make it better. So let me see if Ms. Emerson is on the line and who we might have in our chat room. No, she isn't on yet. Wow. Well, if I had a backup, I'd have someone to call. And unfortunately, as always, dealing with changes, as Mr. Brown says, when trouble comes, don't go with it. So my cell phone has been left somewhere today. So if she tried to reach me there, I did put a forwarding number. So I would actually like to hear from someone in our chat room. If you have any questions or dialogue that you would like to address to me, I'm here and would be glad to comment about any of the questions that you might have about the issue of the child, and especially the African-American child in the foster care system. And if you are aware of any circumstances that you have been involved in, or that you may have observed that you had questioned about or wish you could have done something about, that's what this is all about, coming up with healing solutions, because we know that there's always more than one side to every story, more than one side to every experience, and more than one idea about how to rectify that situation. So let's see. I thought I saw a question, but it's just a comment. Someone else is trying to get grounded as well to find out what, how to make this call work for you. And I realize for some of us on the East Coast, it is actually a little after 9 o'clock. Here in the Pacific Coast, in the West Coast, it is a little after 6. So we both are probably all in transitional modes. So, anyway, as I was saying, that I too was an adoption professional and ventured out to become an adoptive parent. And I'll just share some of my story with you about how it is that I became an adoptive parent. And a lot of this is the story of my book, which is, again, it's hard work, Being the Village That Raises a Child. And you can find my book at www.talktomse.com or www.forachildsheart.org or at hearttalkpublications.net, I believe it is. Anyway, the book is a memoir about my experience in working with young people across the board. And then the second half of the book is about my experience in bringing the village home. And even though I always thought that I would adopt, it didn't happen in the way that I thought it would. Having worked in the adoption field for probably about 3 or 4 years, when I left, people were actually surprised that I had not adopted a child. And some of my friends stated, "You mean you got out of there without bringing a child home?" And like, yes, I did. However, after being away from that agency for maybe a year, I received a phone call from one of the social workers that I had been my coworker, saying they had this little boy that the staff thought about me and felt that I would be an appropriate parent for this child. Now, mind you, I had not told them I was interested in adopting, at least not at that particular point in my life, that I wanted to adopt, but they just, for some reason, thought it was a good idea. And ironically, the play therapist that I was working with in a child respite program in Northern California had just told me I was having one of those crazy days, and she stated to me, "Evelyn, you know what you need? You need to have a child." And I said, "Oh, really? Where am I going to get them from?" So within an hour, the phone rang, and there began the conversation about me adopting a child. And one of the comments that was made, "You know, and he kind of looks like you." My response to them was like, "Yeah, right. He's a little black boy. I'm a black woman. Of course he looks like me," because the rest of the staff were all of different ethnicities, non-African American. So that was just a little joke. But in the meantime, I was somewhat surprised, I wasn't somewhat surprised. I was shocked. And I got the information. I told them, "Well, send me the information." I was on my way to take a trip to Hawaii, you know, just free-spirited, single, childless woman. And as things would happen, when I went there, the story continued. And I'm not going to tell you the whole story because I would like for you to purchase the book and read. However, while there, I actually met the then child that was being referred to me. I met his foster mom, who I already knew, but I saw her during my trip and was told, "I hear that you're going to adopt Brian," which is the child's name. So long story short, today Brian is now Bryant Polk, my son, and he is now 31 years old. It's hard to believe how quickly the time has gone. And he was 9 years old at the time. And when I did decide to move ahead and to adopt him, I was very, very excited about it. I knew that there would be challenges. I knew that there would be some things that would be different from not having been a part of his life from the very beginning. And it was hard work. When I started my nonprofit organization for Child's Heart, I basically had talked to a colleague who was herself a former, well, then was a current adoptive parent. And we were working on an event that was sponsored every year by the Bay Area counties, Northern California, well, Mid-California as well, social workers. And it was called the Black Adoption Fair, And the purpose of this event was to be able to match children with families and get families to have a close-up interaction with the children to realize that they just weren't cases, they weren't just names or numbers, but they were actually live, living, breathing, beautiful young children that they would might want to take into their hearts. So one of the things that bothered me about that was that I realized that sometimes I felt it was a setup, because even though the children are beautiful and bright, there are some issues, and I didn't feel like the families were being set up or prepared to deal with the issues that some of the children brought with them. And also, the children were not prepared to deal with a lot of the issues that the adults had. And so in talking to my colleague, Karen McCourt, who, again, I would say was a foster parent and at that time was a social worker as well, and I remember driving across the Bay Bridge and saying, you know what, we need to do something about that. And therein came the concept and idea for A Child's Heart. Now, when I started the program, I already had my oldest son, and I jokingly, yet seriously, state now that little then did I know then that I would need the services as much as anyone else. And the goal and vision for A Child's Heart is that every child experiences a sense of acceptance and belonging in their families and communities, and that every child experiences stability. That, and in doing so, we have to make sure that the family is committed and feels supported in being a parent to that child. A lot of times parents will say, I can't do this. And my take is, well, if it was your biological child, you wouldn't say that, even though we know that occasionally that still does happen, but not at this point, that place in the game. So the goal of For a Child's Heart is to really to reinforce the need and the possibility of there being permanence within the family. So going through the experience that I had with my son, I had a little bit of a headway, because at that point I was, already well grounded in my clinical work. I had been a social worker, I had been a residential treatment counselor, and I knew a little bit about what was going on. But I honestly believe to this day that every social worker, every placement worker, even every therapist should bring a child home with them for at least a week, if they can last that long, because seeing them once a week in therapy or seeing them once a month as a social worker is nothing in comparison with living with them 24/7, as I'm sure it is with any of us. So it's a marriage. And as with marriage, you get to know a lot about people. And I think a lot of adoptive parents go into it feeling like, this is going to be their major contribution to the world. They're going to save the world. Are a lot of us go in thinking that this is going to be the family that I never had. There's usually some incentive there for the adoptive parents to adopt. And it's really important that adoptive parents and foster parents be very clear about why you're doing this, because there's a chance that your personal needs are not going to quite, or your expectations are going to be quite met through this new union of being an adoptive or foster parent. There's going to be some disappointment, but there's just like any other relationship, it's workable, it's doable. If you have the right support, if you have the right tools, and you have someone willing to work with you. And we have started here at For a Child's Heart, we have, during National Foster Pride Month, which is in May, we have an award that we call the Bringing the Village Home Award. And that award goes to people who have worked in the community, worked with kids, and after working with the kids all day long and going home to what could be their haven, decide, you know what, I care enough that I want to do more than bring myself to where this child is. I want them to experience something different. And so our first award in that area went to a gentleman who is a local here in Vallejo, California, and he was the founder of the Continental of Omega Boys and Girls Club, and his name is Mr. Fillmore Graham. And he has mentored many, many, many young people here in the city of Vallejo, California, for years, I think probably about 30 years. But he and his wife, they had a biological daughter, but they still decided to adopt a young man who then I think was probably about 8 to 10 years old. And it was hard work. And it's just an awesome experience now to look at the two of them, well, the two because the mom has since passed, but to look at the relationship they have and the love and the commitment Mr. Graham made to his son, Montoya, and endured all of the madness. And so that award was first awarded to him, and it was called the Fillmore and Jamila Graham Bring Your Village Home Award. And so that is the concept behind that talking to Ms. Emerson this evening, was that she was one that, knowing all of the challenges that there were, that was still willing to bring the village home. So it's just exciting to know. And if there are any other listeners out there who have had a similar experience, we'd like to hear from you. I know we have a few people in the chat line. I can't tell who's listening live. Somehow that screen will not come up for me. But if you want to call in and share your personal experience about being an adoptive parent, the number is... it's not showing the whole screen. I'll give you the area code in a minute, but the number is 675-8303. And it's not showing. I believe it's 404. If someone in the chat room can jot that down for me, I'd really appreciate it. But we would really like to hear from you. And I've closed many of the screens on my computer because I have ADD and I don't want to be distracted clicking buttons. And I think that's also one of the most important aspects of learning about how to parent our children and realizing that even though they may have labels placed on them, it doesn't mean that they're incapable of being successful and being functional. And I get a kick out of, you know, pointing out my own little issues, and it was to laugh at them. And I think one of the things is to be lenient and to be patient with our children, and that starts with being patient with ourselves. And I thank you for our chat guest for putting in the number for me. It is 424-675-8303. Again, the number is 424-675-8303. Thank you for that. So if you have an experience or a question or an observation to make about the issue of adoption in general, and then again specifically the issue of the need for permanence in the African American community, please feel free to ask. In my working with young people and bringing my own sons home after I adopted Bryant, 2 years later, I adopted another child who was 4 years younger than Bryant. And actually, I did not actually get to legally adopt him, but for all practical purposes, he is my child. And I love him to pieces. He's 27, and even as of this day, has just created many, many challenges for me. But the one thing about it, I always tell people, if nothing else, if a child can come up and say that I know I had a mom, I know I had a dad, or I know that somebody loved me, that makes all the difference in the world, because our society is just really disconnected. There's so much going on. We all need to know that someone cares about us. And it helps if it's someone who understands who we are, understands where we come from, and understands what our struggle is in the world, being who we are. I see we have a couple of callers, and I'm going to open up the line and see if you have any comments or questions. I'm going to start with caller number one. Hello, this is Miss Evelyn.
Is that me, Miss Evelyn?
Yes, it is. Hi.
Hi, it's Sunday. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm very good. I can't say much about being black or adopted. So I have no firsthand experience with either of those.
Well, actually, you know, for those who are listening, Sunday was our guest about, what, 2 or 3 weeks ago as a former foster child. However, being in some of the residential facilities that you were in the group home, I know that you were in a multicultural setting.
Absolutely.
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 And I know that you were impacted by some of those cultural differences. Were you ever placed in a home different than your own ethnic background?
I was not placed in a home different than my own ethnic ground, technically, but I do have a whole other family that took me in that was or is still black, and I was with them on and off for years until my mama Word died several years ago. We're still all brothers and sisters and do holidays and things like that together. So usually you hear the opposite, you know, when you talk about transracial adoption or transracial foster care, the topic usually you hear is the opposite direction. But I did have the experience of living and, in the group homes, number one, and then with the Word family, number two, who, like I said, were just – they were there when nobody else was, and I'm very, very grateful for them. So I'm like black by proxy, that's what I always say.
Now, I remember when we first spoke, you talked about having picked up, just being in the environment, a lot of the cultural, some of the cultural patterns, and dialect and conversation, and that actually created some issues for you with peers down the line. But I'm not going to go into that conversation just yet, but we'll come back to that because that is still important, why people need to know. You know, it's not that I'm talking about right or wrong, but there are some differences that really need to be considered in making sure that child is surrounded by, first and foremost, love, but also understanding the cultural differences and how to bridge. I'm going to go to our next caller, and I'm going to come back to you and say hi to the babies for me. I'll be right back.
Okay. I'm going to mute you.
Okay. Hello. I have someone there. This is Miss Evelyn. Hello? Okay. I guess we have someone who doesn't really want to talk. Okay. We'll come back to you. Beep us if you need to talk. I think there's a way to send a signal here. And again, if anyone has any comments or questions about adoption, about cross-cultural placement, about the need for children to be placed within their cultures or not, please give us a call at 424-675-8303. One of the things that Sunday commented on is that it's usually the opposite. Usually the bigger issue is the fact that a lot of times children of different ethnicities, especially here, I'm just going to be specific when we're talking about African American, there's a lot of issue about children being placed transracially. And some people have taken issue with that, but my thing is not taking issue with that per se, it's that saying that there are not families in that in the African American community who are open, willing, and able to adopt. And so that, I believe, is the premise behind saying, yes, we do, and there are, has been a history of people in our community and in our cultures really adopting unofficially. You know, it's not done through legal courts or through social service agencies, because most of us have grown up with somebody that is, you know, either our play brother, our play sister, our cousin, or somebody. We just consider them to be extended family members. However, with the rate of foster care going up and with some of the issues that our society is facing these days, there's a lot of overflow. We've always had kinship care, which is now being called kinship care, and is a big thing, but we've been taking care of children, you know, of nieces, nephews, grandchildren, brothers and sisters for years. But now, since children have become a part of the system, it has become necessary for people to, I guess, label or designate where the children are and how that's going to happen. And that's created some issues. And I would actually be interested in hearing from some relative caregivers as well. My experience was similar to what Sunday was saying. It was the opposite. In addition to my two boys, I fostered two young ladies who were Caucasian. And when they came to me, it was basically understood that it was going to be a short-term foster care placement until their adoptive home was certified and approved and that they could make that move. So they were with me for probably about 6 months. And one of the things that came up is the young lady, then 11, stated to me, asked me, why couldn't I adopt her? Why didn't I adopt her? And my comment or my response was basically, well, you already, you know, have a family and someone that is interested. And you know, it had already gone through. But one of my concerns and reservations was not that I did not love her, not that I did not want her. It was that I felt that she had already gone through a lot already in her life that she shouldn't have to explain to someone why she was with me, which, you know, it was just very obvious from the, you know, the outskirts. Even when I would go to pick her up in her after-school program, we talked about what would she tell the kids who I am. So we just agreed that she'd tell them that I was her godmother. And to this day, she calls me her godmother, and she's 27 years old, I believe. However, as an adult, when we have talked, she has stated to me that she still wishes that I had adopted her and that she could have dealt with all of the rest of it. And I think that says a lot about how we undermine the resiliency in children, how we sometimes with our own issues and fears do not do things outside of the box because we don't want those children to feel isolated. So that was an experience for me that I still have some issue about. But we have a question on the chat board, and I see our guest has arrived. So I'm going to welcome our guest, and I'll check the message. So hello, Ms. Ruth, are you there?
I am here. Hi, Evelyn. How are you?
I am great. I'm glad you made it.
Yes, I'm excited. We're here at the office getting ready for our conference this weekend, and so I'm excited, very excited.
Yes, yes, yes. I've done my I've told part of your story and end up telling part of mine.
Okay, it's okay.
Well, let's stop because we really have 26 minutes left. And, however, something I learned last week, at 26 minutes, the program recording will end, but we can continue to talk as long as, you know, there are questions and people are interested after. It just will not be recorded.
Okay?
So let me introduce again our guest for this evening, Ms. Ruth Amerson. She is, I always use this title first, an adoptive parent. She's a biological parent, and she's the founder and CEO of Another Choice for Black Children in Raleigh and Charlotte, North Carolina. So we're glad you're here. Let's, first of all, you mentioned that you're excited about a conference that you're going to be working on. Tell us about this conference.
This is our 28th annual conference, and we started this conference as volunteers through an organization called Friends of Black Children. And this was an effort in North Carolina to empower our community folks to go out and educate and encourage folks to become adoptive and foster parents for children in care. And when we started totally as a volunteer effort, we would recruit families and encourage them to go to the public agencies and express their interest in becoming an adoptive and foster parent. And through the years, families were got real frustrated by that process. And about 15 years later, we decided to open our own agency to work with these families.
What were some of the frustrations?
Basically, families complained of not receiving return phone calls, that they would call the workers and could not get information. They were concerned that they were told they would have to go through classes, but the classes were arranged at a time that families could not take off work. There was some they were concerned about the size of families' homes and or their educational level. And a lot of families felt really frustrated because they knew they had raised kids and they feel like they were doing a good job and they wanted to impact the life of a child. However, the system just did not seem to understand their strengths, and therefore many of those families just never made it through the process. They just gave up.
Mm-hmm. And before you came on, and I'm not sure if you heard, I was talking about why there was the issue of recruiting African-American families, and I felt that part of it is that to get out the message, it's not that there are not families who are interested, but there was a lack of representation in the workers who were going out to assess the families, and also there was a lack of cultural competence and understanding some of the cultural dynamics that might otherwise not be looked at, you know, very positively.
Absolutely. And one of the things we have in our community, we have always taken care of children informally. So over a million African-American children are in homes of grandparents or cousins or other kin who are taking care of them and raising them without any assistance from the system. But the children who found their way into the foster care system, agencies were thinking that black families do not adopt because there were so many black kids in the care. But what they did not realize is that we have always adopted, and actually black families adopt more kids than anybody else. And so agencies, when they began to look at their practices, they looked at their competencies or lack of thereof, when they began to look at what are the barriers, whether or not they're institutional barriers or just biases, what are those things that keep African-American families from completing the process? And when agencies did a real evaluation, a lot of them began to change their practices, and as a result, they saw movement. They saw children who were considered unadoptable. They saw black boys, families adopting black boys. They saw families coming in to adopt teenagers. They saw families adopting more than one brother or sister, because they began to really make a concerted effort to find homes to get these children out of the system.
Exactly. And as I was sharing with the audience, when I was an adoption social worker, I had a caseload of all what was considered to be either high risk or unadoptable or, you know, special needs children. And it was only because they were older children, they were part of sibling groups, or they were of an ethnic minority, and my whole caseload was of either older children who were either Latino or African American. And because I would go out into the communities and I worked with the families, and even once they got placed, even if it was a foster adopt situation, and all of my kids on my caseload got placed. And I had one lady to tell me that this one kid, well, Evelyn says she's looking for your home, but don't get your hopes up too high because there aren't a lot of homes for you. And this was a 14-year-old African-American male child. And I was livid. And I said, if it's the last thing I do when I leave this agency, this child is going to have a home. And that was the last child that I placed, and I bowed out. So, yeah.
Well, one of the things our research is showing is that the children's adoptability, if a social worker sees that that child has the potential to be adopted, that child is going to be adopted. But if you believe that no one would adopt that child, by golly, no one is going to adopt that child. And so the social worker's belief, and what you were saying is that you had a whole caseload of kids that other folks considered no one would want these children for whatever reason, but you found homes for them because you saw the strength in those children, you saw their potential, and you made it happen.
And I also, like you said, looked at some of the families that someone else might have turned away. And it's not that the standards were lowered. It was about how to understand and how to get the messages across to those families. And I think some people, as you say, will cast judgment and not. And, you know, there were some people who were not the most sophisticated, who didn't have, you know, four-year college educations, but were just basic, good, loving families that other people would have, you know, turned their nose up, who turned out to be some of the best parents.
Absolutely, because one of the things that you see is that even without agencies, the families who have adopted the upper, what I would call the upper middle-class black families through our agency, they got the children with the less problems. They got the babies. They got the children who had not been in care that long. But the families who really stood the test of time were those everyday families that we call good enough families, families who may not have a whole lot of education, but they have a lot of love, they have a lot of patience, and they have a lot of good mother sense in terms of children and what people need.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did you get involved? I know you mentioned the Friends of Black Children that you were involved with first, but were you already a social worker at that point?
Yes, I was working at a public agency and actually in daycare, and I just heard through the grapevine about this effort to that they couldn't find homes for black kids, and I was so fascinated, so I started asking permission to get involved, and my supervisor at that time said no, that was not my job description, so therefore I should not be involved in this. But of course, I was persistent, and I kept, you know, just asking questions and trying to go to any meetings until I got involved with the Friends of Black Children's program, and that's where I began to hear more about what was happening to our black children, not only in North Carolina but across the country, and
mm-hmm.
It was very, very disturbing.
Right, right. Now, what would you say? Because, you know, I work with children of all ethnicities, but I've got a thing, you know, because especially our young black boys, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But what would you say to listeners who might say, well, all of our children need permanency. Why the emphasis on black children?
Basically what I tell them, I say, you know, as long as black children are overly represented, when they're disproportionately represented in the system, then we need to do more efforts to find homes for these kids. And when you take care of black children and find families for those kids, all kids would benefit from that process.
Mm-hmm. Do you know anything about the statistics? Because I don't really follow a lot of statistics. I just go with what I see and what is in front of my face. But do you know what the percentage is of African-American children out of the 500,000 who are in care in the United States?
Actually, I was what they are saying is in terms of the United States that black children represent 30% of the kids in care, but nationally we make up less than those same kids make up less than 17% in the general population. So in the general population of children under the age of 18, African American children represent about 17%. However, in foster care, they make up 30% of the kids in foster care. So you see that they are overrepresented and disproportionately represented.
And then the question is, out of that 30%, what percentage of those end up in permanent homes? You know, and that's the question, because, again, you're looking at how many are able to find stability. And, you know, it's an ugly situation across the board, period. But, yes. And I think when you live in certain communities and you continue to see certain things going on and on, you know, of course, that's what is in front of my face.
Right. And I think what is happening is, you know, we're looking at the statistics from the Children's Bureau, and they say about 20% of the children exited care through adoption. But at the same time, that could be misleading because some of those kids may have gone back to relatives, aunts and uncles or grandparents who are now taking care of those kids. So it doesn't necessarily mean through adoption, but 20% of them had exited care. But mm-hmm. a number of those children are actually aging out of foster care because they have not found a home for those children. So when they turn 18, they are aging out of foster care as well, which is very sad for those children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we see that over and over and over again. So your organization is 15 years old now?
Yes, we'll turn 16 in January. We'll be
a
teenager. You know, when teenagers are just as, you know, schizophrenic sometimes, and, you know, we are just excited about becoming full-fledged teenagers.
Okay, so you're an adolescent organization, so there might be some acting out going on, huh?
Oh, it's going to be some acting out up in here. Absolutely.
And I understand that your agency has been awarded some awards.
Yes, we have. You know, we're always fascinated when folk hear about us because we're a small organization with limited funding, so we don't have the funds to do massive campaigns. So anytime someone recognizes us, we're always like, okay, how did you hear about us? And most of the time it's our families who are telling folk about us, and we've gotten the Tar Heel, which is a national award here in the state for our work. It's a Tar Heel Award. We've gotten an award from Ebony. It's the Sister Speak Luncheon Award. We've gotten Annie Brown Kennedy was an attorney here, and we've got an award as a trailblazing organization. So we've just been blessed, and we've also had the Congressional Angels in Adoption Award that was given through the White House. So just very pleased.
Yes. And I know why, and as I told you, that you're going to have to do a lot to get rid of me. The first time I came as an observer, I participated in certain aspects by interacting with some of your families and the kids, and then when I came back, I've never been in a place where I felt so at home, and the way that you interact with your kids and family, it's just like it's being at home. You know, instead of saying Miss Evelyn, they were saying Miss Ruth, and you know, you're telling them to do this, you're fussed at one and stuff. Didn't I tell you to do? And it was like family, and I just love it. And as a matter of fact, I'm supposed to be there for your event this weekend. However, due to some, you know, family losses and things going on, I'm not going to be able to join you this weekend. But I guess I get to come for your birthday, right?
Oh, absolutely. In January, you come on down. And see, the conference, one of the things about this conference, and I'm glad to hear you say it, it is the spirit that is there in terms of it feels like a family reunion. It feels like a revival. It's very different because you'll also get information on adoption and foster care process, but it's culturally sensitive and it's family-centered. Anytime you have a conference and you base it around the needs of your family, everybody benefits, and it's a win-win.
Right, and there were workshops for the kids. There were workshops for the teenagers. There were workshops for the caregivers. There were workshops for the social workers. There was lots of good food.
Absolutely.
Lots of
and, you know, we have a group. We have a Daddy's Only group that meet during a conference. We have an Adopted Mom group that meets. And this time we're going to have someone giving massages to the moms, and they're going to be Yeah, and
I can play in just my massage.
It is going to be fantastic.
Wow. Well, we want our callers and our listeners to know how to contact you to find out more information if someone wants to attend or if someone wants to, you know, be a sponsor or to donate or to do anything. Give us your contact information.
Oh, wonderful. It's Another Choice for Black Children, and our phone number is 704-394-1124.
Okay. Now, will you repeat that one more time in case someone was looking for their pen or pencil?
Oh, that's great. 704-394-1124.
Wonderful. And email?
They can send it to info, I-N-F-O, at, and it's the first letters of Another Choice for Black Children. So it's info at acfbc.org.
Okay. Good. And we'll give that out again before we end the call in the next 10 minutes. Now, I want to shift gears a little bit because we've talked about, you know, your looking at the situation and taking action, and I love that. And we could talk on for days and days. Actually, we did an interview, a video interview together a couple of years
right.
back, and we're just laughing and talking because we're definitely kindred spirits and loving our babies and willing to speak up and get things done, not waiting for somebody to come along and tell, give us permission to do so. And I love that about you. But the other thing that I loved is that at the point when you decided that it was time to bring the village home, tell us about that experience.
Well, you know, during a conference every year, we generally try to identify a child to come to the conference that may that is waiting in the foster care system for a family, and we try to make a connection, and it's always very successful. And this particular year, 3 years ago, we had a boy there that was 17 years old and was about to age out in foster care. And several families actually had expressed an interest in him, and he ended up, my sons met him, and they were saying, "Mommy, why can't we adopt him?" And I'm like, "Okay." So we met, he was at the conference in November, and the county allowed him to spend Thanksgiving with us a week later. And then less than a month later, the court had approved for him to be placed with us. And that was just it's been very interesting for him and it's been a learning experience.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I remember I was actually there that year, but I had left by the time, you know, that I think, because didn't he get up and speak to the audience?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And what
that? You missed that. And he is, you know, he's a good kid. But he's one of these children who was in care far too long.
Mm-hmm.
The agency should have found a family for him when he was much younger than 17. And so he's having his challenges in terms of being in the family. But
mm-hmm.
he knows he's got somebody who's going to stick with him through thick and thin. And I've met his birth mom.
Oh.
And we've encouraged him to have contact with her and other birth relatives.
I love that. And that's going to be another program that we're going to have about the importance and how to have boundaries but keep doors open to the biological families, because a lot of kids struggle with that sense of loyalty. And when adoptive parents adopt and want to them to be the one and everything and all to that child, they're doing really that child a disservice, and that's really a selfish mode to be in. But I'm curious to know, because one of the things that people said to me when we were doing the Black Adoption Fair, that was almost like treating the kids like animals. It was like a circus because you were exposing them. But I think everybody's experience is going to be different. And I'm curious to know, what did your son say when he got up before the audience that year, 3 years ago?
Well, actually, basically, he just kind of, I always give kids assignments, so it doesn't feel like that they're on display. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, he was able to lead us in a prayer. And
mm-hmm.
then I asked him to do a welcome to folk, so I prompted him. So he was an active participant on the program. And
mm-hmm.
if you did not know, he was looking for a family because he was just there hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we try to do with all the kids is make them a critical, we make them an integral part of what we're doing, so that
mm-hmm.
they're either passing out information, they are interacting with folks. But it's in a very normal situation. It is, they're
mm-hmm.
not paraded around, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Right, and they're involved and they're into it. And what was so funny to me, when you told me that you had adopted, and then my not being there and knowing, you know, not knowing specifically what child it was the year before, when I came back the following year and got off the shuttle that night, he and your biological son were actually sitting outside talking, and we got into this little chat going on, and we're just laughing, and then it was the next morning that I found out who he was, and that just cracked me up. And he is. He is a character. He's a sweetheart. And I want people to realize that underneath all of the issues that our children present, that they're just really sweethearts inside. And they mostly all want the same thing. They might not receive it the same. They might not be able to ask for it. And it takes its toll on us, but they need it. They need
it. Absolutely. And I think for my son, he's on his journey. And while I would love to keep him close to me and nurture him and give him all that stuff that he never got as a baby, I realized that I can't go back to those days. I can't give those days back to him, but I can be the best parent I can be now to him and help guide him. And for him, I think he just needs somebody. He just needed somebody in his corner. And you know, and when he's on panels, he talks about, he says, "That's not my adopted mom. She gave birth to me," you know. And I was looking at him like, what is he saying? And he just says, "She's just my real mother. I don't know what anybody," you know. So every time he meets his new girlfriends, he says, "This is my real mom." And I says, "Honey, you don't have to, you know, you don't have to discount your other birth mother. You know, I'm here for you. And I can provide you certain things. But your birth mother also has been there for you as well in her own way. Though she was limited in her care for you, she still loves you."
Yes, yes, yes. One of our callers in our chat room has a question, says, do you think that, and I guess we said they, that social services gives birth families too many chances that make a child too old for adoption?
No. One of my social workers is here in my office, and she's listening to this conversation, and she says no. I think in terms of, we have a responsibility to understand that even when kids, when parents are not able to do what they should be able to do with their kids for whatever reason, you know, sometimes the system is so quick to take those kids out of the home, and sometimes those kids are abused even in foster care, and we do a greater harm to those children. So I think we as a country, or as a community, we need to try to figure out how to support families, because kids, sometimes it is the best thing for kids to go into care and later things may improve. But for a lot of these kids, if the families have been given a little bit more support, those children may not have had to go through the losses, because a lot of them go to, like my son was in about 14 different foster homes. So before he got to me. So that is too many families that he had lived with. So he had to learn rules and that change. Kids shouldn't have to do that. That's just too many changes.
Yes, yes, yes. So, but I also think perhaps for this listener is speaking to, because I do also recall as a worker, a lot of times, you know, a child isn't legally free for adoption until the parental rights are terminated. And foster care is really only supposed to have been up for 18 months, a year, and then an extended 6 months. But a lot of times when parents do just a little bit, they do just enough to the judge to keep extending their time, and they don't move on with a permanent plan for the child. And so I know that is some people's experience. And then the other part is just not people, because my youngest son was in the system for the time he was 9 months old. And even when I got ready to adopt him, I was fought with that. And so I felt that they didn't really have this child's best interest at heart. But we have 90 seconds left for this, the recording of this call. And I would like, before the recording ends, for you to give us, what message would you like to give to the village, and what message would you like to give for us?
You know, basically I would say that children matter. Their heart matters. And I think that if we began to take care of children's hearts, their futures would be more secure. And when we do that by just the village taking its rightful place in the lives of these children, things would be different in our nation.
Yes. And I concur, and you know I'm all about the heart. So right now we're just going to say goodnight to our listeners to the recording, and we're going to hold on and allow just a few more minutes to carry this conversation after the recording ends. Thank you for being on the call.
Hello?
Heavenly mother crying, these children are dying at the hands of the other child.
Okay. You there? Hello?
Hello?
Okay. I'm still here. I just wanted to, the recording ended, but we're still here.
Okay.
Okay. Is this Ruth?
No, this is Sunday. I think Ruth might have hung up.
Well, I think I'm, no, I muted her out. Okay. Ruth?
Okay. Yes, I'm muting again.
Okay. I accidentally muted you out because I wanted to, you know, the call to end with the music, with the recording, so when people go back to listen to the archives, they can hear that. But we do still have a couple of other listeners still on. So I just wanted to ask you, where did you get your support? We talk about biological families needing support, and I know that post-placement services are a real need with families who adopt, and I think, you know, that I need it more than anything else. What was your support source, or what has been your support source in dealing with your son?
Actually, I have a my coworkers have been tremendous. They have been a tremendous support. And actually, my board of directors, anytime I've needed respite, I mean, I could have called any of them to come and help me out. My other adopted parents through my agency have been another support to us.
My dog decides she wants to talk. At least the recording is off. She hears someone at the front door. And that is so crucial, having that support. And the respite is crucial. The being able to have a sounding board to people who truly understand, because for me, even though I understand it, people would say things that would actually make me angry because I was feeling protective of my boys. You know, people would say things, you know, we've heard, you know, the comment by people that said to Les Brown's mother, you need to send those little boys back to the welfare department. That's not what we want to hear.
I just say God bless people because they don't know any better.
Yeah, but we need better. And so that's why I want to educate the community, educate the village on how to be the village, to embrace the families that do take the children in. We have a commercial for a company now that says everyone can't be a foster parent, but everybody can help a foster child.
Oh, absolutely.
And my initial comment is that not everybody needs to be a foster parent. Not everybody should be a foster parent or an adoptive parent, but we can teach them how to be the village to embrace those who do.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So, actually, I'm looking to see, like I said earlier, I can't see the number of live listeners. I can only see the live callers and the people in the chat room. So I'm just going to put out another opportunity for anyone, if they have any comments or questions, to ask them now, whether it's via phone, which the call-in number is, let me look at it again. My page has slipped. Oh, there it is. It's 424-675-8303. So if you're one of the live listeners and you want to call in, or if you're in the chat room and you have a question to be addressed to Ms. Ruth or myself, please do so now. And we'll prepare to end the call. So I just hope that you will have a wonderful experience this year. And I have two of my hearts, my teenage boys there, besides your son, and I'm not saying his name because you didn't disclose it, so I didn't either, but there's another young man named Michael that I saw so much growth in from the first year I was there until the last time I was there. So I'm really excited to be able to see the children grow, to
Absolutely.
See the family and hear what they have. So please give everybody my love.
I sure will. Evan, thank you so much for allowing us to be a part of this. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And we'll talk to you soon. I'll be looking forward to the update. Send me all the details.
Absolutely. Thank you, and good night.
Take care. You too. Bye-bye.